like rationale there of the weird guy who's
OCD. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, again, for coming and for learning and for spending your morning on Victoria Day learning Torah. I'll also just point out, if, in case you didn't know this already, but this is just never make major life decisions based on an hour-long experience that you have on a statutory holiday. So whatever discussions that we have here and learn here or the sources that we've seen right now, don't necessarily assume this is the bottom line for everything. You know, this should be the beginning of conversations about how we act, just as a little disclaimer. Okay, so we started on the page with three different scenarios. Scenario number one, Elizabeth is looking to sell her car. Justin calls Elizabeth up and offers to buy the car for $5,000. Elizabeth responds that she wants to sleep on it. She hasn't committed. She's thinking about it. The next morning, just as she is about to call Justin and confirm the sale, Elizabeth receives a call from Pierre. He has heard about Justin's plans and offers Elizabeth more money for the car. So, and I had the question at the end of each one of these is, did so-and-so act ethically? You can, we could, I know there was discussion about, is ethics the same as halacha? Is it moral? Very, very interesting conversations. We're going to sidestep those for right now, but definitely, definitely worthwhile. We might come back to that in a little bit. That was scenario number one. Scenario number two, while attending BMZD's Yarche Kala, a hungry Doug sees the last bagel sitting on the table. As he approaches the container, the bag, with his arm outstretched, Rob swoops in and grabs the bagel first. So did Rob, seeing that his brother, I'm assuming Rob and Doug are brothers, assuming, because they are, assuming that he knows his brother there is going to get the bagel, did Rob act ethically there? And then scenario number three, Victoria is in a happy romantic relationship with Albert. John, however, is interested in dating Victoria and asks her out. Was this appropriate of John to have done? Those are the three scenarios, and hopefully that is, like, just the scenarios themselves have led to interesting conversations. And as was pointed out in various different places, you add a sentence, you change something slightly, and the whole scenario changes completely. But it's good to just have things to think about and talk about as we go through them. Okay, so for the sources, we started with source number one. So by the way, any questions, anyone want to bring any comments just on the scenarios themselves? We'll talk about each one of them. Yeah.
You didn't imply any of the questions that the person who swooped in knew that the other one was looking at.
You're right.
The questions.
Well, I did for the first scenario.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Is that relevant? Or is it somebody's responsibility to inquire?
Do I have to ask for? Okay. Interesting. We'll touch on that lightly. Because I made the scenario and I took their names from the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford. He has a brother, Rob. That's where I got all of these names:
Queen Elizabeth,
Justin,
Queen Victoria.
Pierre, Elizabeth, Victoria was married to Albert.
And then
John was the McDonald was the first prime minister.
After Albert died.
Oh, is that true?
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Very true.
Well, which John? John who?
John Brown.
Okay, conversation for another time. Okay.
She was buried with a lock of his hair.
Okay. So, Kiddushin, source number one. So we have this passage of Masech Kiddushin. Rav Gidel was engaging in the acquisition of a certain plot of land. In the meantime, Rabbi Abba went and he purchased it. Rav Gidel went and complained about Rabbi Abba to Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera went and complained about it to Rabbi Abba. Complained about Rabbi Abba to Rabbi Yitzhak Navcha. He said to him, "Wait until Rabbi Abba sends to visit us for the pilgrimage festival, when all come to hear the festival sermon, on which occasion we can discuss the matter with him." When Rabbi Abba ascended to Rabbi Yitzhak Navcha, he found him and said to him, "If a pauper is engaging in the acquisition of a loaf, ani hameapech v'charara, and that he found, and another came along and took it from him, what is the halacha?" Rabbi Abba said, "Oh, the person who took it, he's called wicked." Rabbi Yitzchak, he replied, "If so, what is the reason that the master acted this way? You just did that. You took it from him." Rav Gidel was negotiating the purchase of this land, and you purchased it. Rabbi Abba said to him, "I did not know that he was trying to acquire the land." You're right. It is an act of Rasha. It's wicked. But I didn't know. Source number two, Rashi, talking about this situation. What is this? Ani hameapech v'charara. This pauper, this poor person, seeking out this loaf. He says, "Machzer acharei lizkot ba min ha-hefker, o shidena lo ba'al ha-bayit." He's seeking to acquire it from hefker, from ownerless property. oh, she'd nena lo bala bayit, or that the property owner will give it to him. That's the way Rashi envisions this ani, this poor person seeking this loaf, is trying to get it, even if it's ownerless. I'm trying to grab it. Put that in one compartment in your head. There's another passage of the Gemara, source number 3, the Gemara in Baba Batra. It's part of a longer conversation that we in Beit Midrash Zichron Dov spent a lot of time talking about this specific scenario. Marchikin mitzudat hadag min hadag, kimlo ritzat hadag. One must distance fish traps from fish, i.e. other fish traps, as far as the fish travels, i.e. the distance from which the fish will travel, and that I can't, if Idan has put his trap fish trap over here, I have to distance my fish trap from that. On that specific scenario, Tosvot, in source number 4, on the top of page 2, Tosvot says, even though Rabbeinu Tam holds that when acquiring something that is ownerless, he is not even called a wicked person. Rabbeinu Tam says, if the poor person is trying to acquire this ownerless object, and I swoop in and I grab it first, Rabbeinu Tam says, I, swooping in second, am not considered wicked. This we see from Peah 4:3, and I give you that in source number 4, in source number 5, in full. Peah 4:3, regarding spreading a cloth over grains, that we remove him, the person who spread the cloth over the grains, we remove him from the grains. Is that you're trying to hide them so you can acquire them, and you're trying to hide these grains? We say, get out of here, and other people can take it. So what, others can take it, even though it is evident that the former desired to acquire these grains. I indicate that I want to acquire this object. I do something in a sneaky way. The rabbis say, Jared, you're out of here. Other people can, what do you mean other people can take it? Is this not like a poor person? I'm trying to acquire this and someone else comes in and steals it first? That's the first example that Rabbeinu Tam gives. And another one from Baba Metzia, 10a, regarding one who sees an ownerless object and falls upon it, though doesn't legally acquire it, and someone else comes and acquires it, even though the former clearly desired to acquire the object, meaning I throw myself on something. For whatever technicality, I have not acquired that object. But everyone can see, when I fell on this bottle of milk, I wanted to acquire the bottle of milk. I didn't. I didn't acquire it, but I wanted to acquire it. But nonetheless, if you come along and take the bottle of milk, you can take, you walk away with it, it's totally fine. What? Rabbeinu Tam says, yes, you know why? Because this bottle of milk in this object, in this scenario, was an ownerless object. If I try to acquire an ownerless object, and for whatever reason I haven't yet, and you come in and preempt me, Rabbeinu Tam says, that's not a wicked person. The second person who acquires it in that way, that's not a problem. Only in a case of the poor person seeking a loaf, and a second comes and takes it, because if the latter doesn't acquire it here, he can acquire it somewhere else. Right? You get it? I'm sorry. That English was incorrect. If the latter doesn't acquire it here, he cannot acquire it somewhere else. Right? If this is an ownerless object, let's say it's a car. It's a free car just sitting in the parking lot. The keys are just sitting there. Anyone can take it. So you're running to the car, and I run and get there first, I'm allowed to do that, Rabbeinu Tam says, because where am I going to find a free car? This is totally fair game. No one can find a free car like this. You just got a car for free? That's amazing. It's only in a case where I can get it somewhere else. You're trying to purchase object X. I could just as easily go somewhere else to purchase it. But I'm deciding I want to preempt you. That is the case. Or Rabbeinu Tam says, that's inappropriate. Get it somewhere else. But if we're talking about something that you cannot get anywhere else, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity right here. This object right here, you can't get this anywhere else. That, just because person A is trying to get there, you're not barred from that. You can go get it. Because who else? This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Just because he happens to be walking there first doesn't mean you can't go there first. That's what Rabbeinu Tam comes to. And this case of the fish, there is no question. In the case that he's talking about, why do I have to distance my net from my friend's net? Oh, it's all ownerless, so shouldn't I be allowed to do where? The answer is no. There are many places you could cast your net. Throw your net somewhere else. You don't have to be right here at this moment. So he said, well, maybe there is a reason. Maybe you want to be close. This is, in a good location. You want it to be specifically here? That's an interesting question to talk about. Maybe this is an ideal place. But let's assume not. Let's assume Rabbeinu Tam says, you can cast your net. There are plenty of fish in the sea, right? Cast your net over there. Cast your net over there. There are other places you can do it. The bottom line, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is that if the object in question that you and I are fighting over, if this object is ownerless, and if you don't get it, or if I don't get it here, I might never be able to get anything like this ever again. This is a very special thing. I want this. You don't get this, like, this doesn't come around. I'm allowed to preempt you to get it. According to Rashi, I'm not allowed to do that in all circumstances, whether it is ownerless, whether it is owned by some, whatever the scenario is. Rashi had cast a wide net. He made a blanket rule. You're not allowed to. If person A is in the act of acquiring, is trying to acquire this object, and I cannot try to preempt him to it. That is inappropriate. Any questions on this debate between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam? Surrounds, what do we do with ownerless objects? Do we treat ownerless objects in their own class of their own, that we can I can try to preempt you to acquire it because it's ownerless? That would be Rabbeinu Tam. Or Rashi says, no, doesn't matter. Once person A has indicated that she's interested in this object, person B can't come along and try to preempt her.
There's a difference between the car and the bread.
Okay.
If I am dying of hunger, right, I am allowed to fight for the bread on the basis that my blood is as red as yours.
Okay, so you want to throw in a little pikuach nefesh, life.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. And we'll see elements of this come up. Nice. Yeah, hi. So we'll come there. We'll come there. Good question. Did you do scenario one?
No.
Okay, so I gave you source number 7 is the Ramban. He basically summarizes everything. I want to talk more about the scenarios. So we'll skip reading the Ramban inside right now. But the Ramban basically, he summarizes the positions of Rabbeinu Tam and on Rashi, and how Rashi believes that this you're called a rasha, you're called a wicked person, in all those scenarios. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam is comfortable saying, if you're trying to acquire from an ownerless state of ownerlessness, it's not a problem. Okay, so scenario number one. Who discussed scenario number one? Anyone here do scenario number one? Yeah, scenario number 3 was the one that was really exciting. You guys did scenario number one? Okay, so any thoughts before looking at any of these sources? What were your thoughts on scenario number one? Given Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam, how do you sort of see that playing out?
Things that were different. It wasn't an ownerless situation. We were looking at the person who was offering a higher price as opposed to the person who was selling and implicitly agreeing on a price. We weren't evaluating whether she was doing the right thing.
Yeah. So a lot of how well does scenario number one? How easy is it to sort of impose these rules that we've seen onto scenario number one? It's essentially what you're saying.
And the very last thing was, if we said that Pierre was Jewish, the other two were not. How would people look at his in a wider spectrum?
So we didn't even. We did not go down the road of how does this work as far as Jews versus non-Jews. It's a really, and then you could throw a lot of different Chilul Hashem types of things into this. There's a lot of layers that one could discuss in these scenarios, for sure. But let's take a look at source number 8, the Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch tells us the following: Hamechazer achar devar liknerko ulasachro, one seeking to purchase or rent something. Bein karka, bein metal, something, whether it's land, a movable object, uva acher ukna'o mikra rasha, and someone else comes and preempts into it, that latter person is called a rasha, it's called a wicked person. V'hu adin l'rotzeh l'haskir atzmo etzel acher, and the same applies to one who wants to hire himself out to someone else. Right, so the scenario the Shulchan Aruch lays out is not one of just simply, oh, there's an ownerless object, I'm going to try to grab it, but he's saying specifically, this is a situation where it's ownerless. Where you're trying to connote, you're trying to. It sounds like acquire, purchase, maybe the sachro to rent something. It sounds like there's another party here. It's not just me versus him. It's me versus him acquiring this object owned by someone else. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Now the Ramah the Moshe Isserles in the brackets and the italics. This is Haggah. V'choze lo mayri ela shekfar pasku adamim shebeinehem. This is all this being called a wicked person would only apply when they've already decided on a price between them. V'ein mechusarin ela hakinyan. The only thing that's lacking is a technicality, is the actual formal act of acquisition. We've said, we've agreed, I'm going to give you this, okay, we've agreed on this. We just haven't, you know, shaken on it. We haven't exchanged the keys. We haven't done a formal act of acquisition. Everything else is taken care of. Aval, im chusarim adayin hapsika. If it's lacking a set conclusion, if it hasn't yet been finalized, if they're still like the negotiation state, Rav Yehuda, you guys were talking about an auction, right? An auction is literally the price is changing every 5 seconds. It is far from set. He's saying this mother, it is a constantly in flux. It is by no means, oh, all that's lacking is the formality at the end. We're very far from the formality at the end. In that case, he's saying, if all that's left, it's all been agreed upon except the final thing, that's when it's a problem. But as long as it's still in flux, as long as it's still on the market, right? As long as it's still open to discussion, she, in the scenario that we've seen, well, actually, I won't apply. What do you think, based on source number 8, what do you think about the car case? Based on what the Rambah here is saying, is that as long as it's not been, if all that's lacking is the final handshake, that's the problem. But if it's still open, it's not a problem. What are thoughts? How do you think? How does that overlay?
She's still open because she said she wasn't super.
Yeah, she's still. The fact that she's made in her mind, though. Let's say she said, she woke up in the morning saying, I'm going to sell to him. Does that change it at all for you?
As long as it's still open, it's open.
As long as it's still open, it's open. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
I don't think that changes it. I think it might change it. We didn't really discuss it from Elizabeth's perspective, about her. Like, you know, like, there's that story about the car or someone who was, like, davening, and the guy kept offering him more money, and then at the end he was like, no, I was going to give it to you over a cheaper price, I just couldn't talk. So, like, if you wanted to be, if we were discussing Elizabeth's ethics, then it might be, like, the decenter thing to do for her to sell it to, if she had intended that, then to sell it to Justin.
Interesting.
From her perspective, but from Pierre's perspective, and Justin's perspective, I think that
this Pierre is still
fine.
Open.
I think Pierre's fine because Justin doesn't know that. It's not, there hasn't, in terms of like the legal sort of fact of them having agreed on something, Elizabeth kind of coming to a conclusion in her mind, I don't think should like bear on the relationship.
That's interesting. Again, and I mean, we've, I think every group sort of talked about this, that, you know, we didn't necessarily see anyone explicitly talk about Elizabeth
the
here,
seller,
or
right.
In like, or the in the scenario number 3 with the girl.
Exactly.
We didn't. So it's a, you're
so
making you're
that,
raising an interesting point. Like, forget about okay, whatever Justin, what's going on between Justin and Pierre, but what about from Elizabeth's perspective, right? She's here as agreed, committed. She's going to sell it for this lower cost. In her mind, is it appropriate for her to now shift to take the other?
So that's kind of the exact opposite of what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
I was saying like. You're saying, I'm saying that, what about Elizabeth? And I'm saying, leave Elizabeth
out of it. Leave Elizabeth out of it.
Like, Elizabeth's thought is irrelevant.
Separate case. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No. I'm pointing out, you're bringing another aspect in, which I think is an interesting one to consider. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, from Justin's perspective, he's sleeping on it. So he might want to be yes. He has no reason to actually think it's going to be a yes for sure. It's hardly a given.
Right. Last he heard, she's sleeping on it. Yeah. I don't know. I came up with the scenario, and in my mind, she did not give an opening price. But let's say she did. What are your what? So how does that make a difference?
Well, I don't know. She just have a basis, a home base to compare prices.
She has like a set mark that she's putting out that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Very good. Okay. Source number 9 is the Avne Nezer is a response here. He says, Kol zman she'eino rotzeh lemokra. As long as the seller has not decided to buy lemokra lo. He hasn't decided selling to him. Ein din ani amet bech b'charara. That does not yet have the status of the poor person seeking out. As long as the seller hasn't committed to person A, it's still open. Vim ken. Le'olam yechol ha-mocher lechzor meharishon v'limkor le'acher. If that's the case, the seller is always empowered to retract from the first one and to sell to someone else. Ve'acher mutar liknot mimenu, and someone else can purchase from him. Tekevan she'amocher rotze limkor le'acher, v'lo lo'lokeach ha-rishon, shuv ein iser le'acher. As long as the seller has not committed, I'm selling to Justin. As long as she has not committed, I'm selling to... That she's open, I'm not sure. Let's see, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm not really sure. She is empowered to decide, I'm going to sell to person B. I'm going to sell to Pierre. She has that right. It's her object, after all. We can't tell her that she's not allowed to sell it, that she's locked into Justin. We don't do that. But, ein isur rak im ha'acher, hitchilim ha'mocher, v'od shiratzalim kor le'arishon. But, if Elizabeth has committed, she's selling to Justin. And then Pierre comes and says, wait, hear me out. How about this offer? That's the time when, if it's in her mind that she's not, maybe I'll sell, I'm not, then it's totally fair for someone else to get into play. But if she's all but committed, and someone else comes and says, wait, hold on, I've got another offer, that's the case that he says is problematic.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please. That's another factor to put in here. You know, when she's saying she's good with him, with Justin, but the terms could be totally different. That's a good point. That's a really good point. Another wrinkle to throw into this scenario. There you go. Yeah. And I'll pay you $5,000, but you got to pay to have it towed. You know, it's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah.
Now that we know how you pick your names, are they competing with sons? Right? Pierre is your father. Justin is your son.
Yeah.
So your father's your boy. Yeah. Your son.
Yeah. Yeah. No. There's interesting family dynamics here with the father-son fighting over the object. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, so that was this idea that the Avnei Nezer is pointing out, that essentially, right, the last line he says, Zeh pashut ubarur, it's obvious. She'ein shum svar lesor ala mocher limkoret shalo. It's obvious there's no reason to restrict the seller from selling his or her own property, right? If I'm the seller, to say that I'm now handcuffed because Justin gave an offer that I was contemplating, now I'm handcuffed to Justin, That doesn't make any sense. Of course not. The seller has the upper hand. Seller's object. The seller could decide they don't want to sell entirely. Like, the seller has the upper hand here. And so we can't restrict the seller's ability. But it's interesting to point out, though, that the Avnei Nezer is stressing that this only is really fair if the seller was the one who sort of initiated. But if it was a second buyer who says, wait, I've got something else, that's where where the Avnei Nezer is a little uncomfortable with saying, that's okay if its whole idea is because person B came into the picture. Now let's say Pierre didn't know.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, I mentioned that you have houses which are for sale these days, and you've got...
I don't know who can afford buying them, but yeah, okay.
Luckily, I bought 550.
Okay.
But the point is that these days, for example, you have a house, and what goes on now sometimes is that somebody comes in, and on the first day he makes a huge offer. I forget what it's called.
The bid, yeah. They put a high bid in.
Put in a high bid, a blockbuster bid, and nobody else has a chance. Is that fair?
Interesting. Yeah, you box out the competition immediately because offer something that
they say the put in your offer till a certain day, but some guy comes in and the first day he puts in a huge bid, and the guy who wants to sell his house is tempted by the significant bid and says, you know, forget about it, I'm not going to risk anything else. But is it fair to the other guy?
Interesting question. It's an interesting question. Essentially, rigging the situation so that no one else can get this car around. It's good.
There's also a separate issue of whether or not the current system for selling of homes is actually the best and fair system. But that's, I'd say that's a different OP. You know.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, sorry. Fine.
So is it, part of it is a bunch of, is it, was there to be ethics of sales? So then, like, there is a buy it now price is a thing. So then, whether you should have, that's required by law to have a month long opening bid thing. It's like, if you decide you want to sell out now, like, it's not a formal auction. So if you want to say, I'm cutting my losses now, then cut your losses now. And it's a different story than, I mean, the case I was thinking of is more, let's say you approached somebody who wasn't selling their house yet. Right, you're like, I'm gonna give you. You know that they're not even planning on. You're like, I'll give you X amount for your house, right? So then, therefore, it's only between me and you. And then somebody else overhears the conversation, then tries to cut in. So that's a very different story because it wasn't even like on the market at all, and you're legit stealing what I just tried to get.
There you go. And that's third party butting in, trying to preempt. Very good. Okay. Source number 10. Let's say that Pierre did not know about this Justin's offer. All right, so the Aruch HaShulchan of source number 10 says, Ima acher haya shogeg, shelo yada sharishon mehapech bedavar ze liknoto. If the second was unintentional, but shogeg, he didn't know. How am I supposed to know what's going on between Elizabeth and Justin? Pierre says, Rishon mehapech, I didn't know that he was trying to purchase this. And Pierre ends up actually purchasing this. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, we cannot apply the title Rasha to him, wicked person to him. So he says, in a Russia. He's not a Russia, he's not a wicked person. You can't say that he's wicked. He didn't know. Had he known, maybe it would be inappropriate. But he doesn't know. But then, yeah.
The fact that she hadn't committed anything, if she was asleep on it, what's the difference if he knew or not?
So let's say she had committed. Let's say she tells Justin, she's like, great, let's do it. They just haven't shaken on it. Like, they didn't shake on it yet. It's not done. So, it should be a problem. But Pierre didn't know about it. So, had Pierre known, he's a Rasha. But Pierre didn't know. So, if the sale was a valid sale, Pierre doesn't get titled as the Rasha, as the wicked person. But
she has one not going.
What's that?
Not bloody.
Oh, yeah. That's a separate thing about you agree to a transaction, then you... Mishapara, you've committed to this, and then you withdraw your offer. It's a good point. It's a good point too. So here's the last line of the Aruch HaShulchan here, though. He says, even though Pierre's got it, midat chasidut hu le'anichal lifnei harishon gam b'chi agavnai. Nonetheless, Pierre is not in the wrong. He didn't know. Had he known, he would be rasha, but he didn't know. So you could make the argument he was innocent. He didn't know. This is totally fine. He's not a rasha. He's not wicked. Still, the Aruch HaShulchan says.
Then the owner would be mafsid. I mean, the owner will get less money because of that.
So I don't know if
he's mafsid in a tzaddik, but now I'm going to get less $2,500 less on my car because of it. Is that a mafsid? No, why is it not a mafsid? Yeah, but now I get a better offer. So why for me is the one who tries to sell my car? Why do I need to lose $2,500 on the car because of he's a pious person? Thank you very much.
I'm not sure. Does when he says lahanicha lifnei harishon, he gives it to the first person. Does that mean he gets his money? Like,
or should this first person now pay the amount that he offered? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens with the money. I don't know if the seller ends up losing out.
I think there are a couple cases where there's no difference in terms of the price paid in the end.
Yeah, it might be that there's not in the case that he's talking about.
His case is this negligible. The case of the Gemara, it's not that he, you know, offered to overpay by X amount or anything. It's just like he just said, they were debating, and he's like, I'll pay instead right now. And he's like, okay, that's what the Gemara case looks like. So, but if there would be a separate issue if the price actually changed, then would he have to...
One person loses out because I'm a pious person. This is the case that you're talking about.
In that case, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Right. So that's what we are. The second person is the one who ended up acquiring it. So he would, but if it's not Hefker, say, let's say it was a purchase. So then the money, the cost of whatever the second person paid, Pierre paid, let's say. Okay, let's scenario number two. Anyone talk about scenario number two? Everyone really did only scenario number three. Okay, scenario number two. Shulchan Aruch, source number 11. Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh Omrim, Shimba Lizkopa Hefker, Olakabel matana me'acher, uva acher ve'kadmo. There are those who say, I put in brackets, Rabbeinu Tam, that if one is acquiring from ownerless property or receiving as a gift, and someone else gets it first, the latter is not called a wicked person. Kevan she'eno davar hamatsui lo b'makom acher, because this is not found elsewhere. Ve'eshomrim deloshna. And those who say, Rashi, who make no distinction whatsoever, right? In all cases, it's a problem. And the Rama says at the very end, Usvara Rishona Nira Ikar, the first opinion appears correct. In other words, the Rama says, if you're acquiring from Hefker, from ownerless, the bagel, the Doug bagel case, it's Hefker, it was ownerless, no problem. The Sama, in source number 12, he adds a little bit of a piece here. And he says, Perish the Svara Zoha Achrona, according to the latter opinion, which in the Shulchan Aruch was Rashi's opinion, which is more strict, that with the found or ownerless object, Hefker ve'etzebazet, Nikra Rasha, is called wicked. Modim, everyone agrees, they agree. Dim zeha baliz kot oliknot tchila, have ashir. Let's say Doug, the first person, was very wealthy. Uva acher litzol milfanav, and someone else comes along to take it. Hen devar hefker, oshar devar medikneim v'matana, enu nikra rasha. Even according to Rashi, it's not a problem in that case. Kevan de'adayin lo zacha balagamre, since Doug has not yet acquired it fully, ve'achol ishtadel inyan kazeb makom acher, and he could get this somewhere else, alesh etzarich lo tzi alei adamim, but he's okay, he'll have to pay a little bit more to get this. This was a free object right here. Okay, so we can acquire it elsewhere in that. Okay, this was a free bagel. He'll go to the bagel store and have to pay whatever it is for a bagel. He's wealthy. In the kachlum, kevan de'ashir, but Doug is wealthy. So you're going to tell me that Doug wins? Doug can afford multiple bagels. He can afford 1,000 bagels. Because this is Hefker, it doesn't make a difference. He can acquire it elsewhere. And so in that case, we'll tell Doug, the second party can go ahead and take it. The whole rationale that we couldn't take it was because where is he going to get this somewhere else? But he's a wealthy guy, he can get it somewhere else. So gets it somewhere else, he doesn't have to get it from right here. So in that case, we'll push off the wealthy person who was party number one, and we'll say party number two, who went and grabbed it first, was totally fine. Because party one, we'll just buy it somewhere else. And he's very wealthy, he'll get it somewhere else. Even if it's Hefker, he'll get it somewhere else. Not a big deal.
This is not a fair way of changing. I can assume all sorts of things. You also had a servant waiting by to just go pass for the passports and get the bagel. I can always change.
Yeah,
the
so.
It's interesting if you assume like everything is equal and only what's written is given.
Yeah, so he's saying, let's assume if we make the concept of the whole idea, though. I mean, the Sama here in source number 12 is saying that like the idea of Hefker being unique makes sense. Right? But. If you're wealthy, the person is the first person can afford to just buy this somewhere else. So then it makes sense to say, get it somewhere else. We're changing the terms. You're absolutely correct. But I think it's getting to the point there. Yeah.
It's just very surprising to me to adjust like a legal monetary thing based on the finances of the people involved. Just because like there's like explicit like things in the Torah about like don't be
You're not supposed to
be nicer to the poor person. Don't just do the right thing. Like this is shocking to me.
So
it's his or it's not. Like it's
so let's go, then we'll take that with to go to source number 13, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, essentially is saying, regardless of what the rule is on the ground, Mikol Makom Baal Nafesh Yachmir Le'atzmo. So he's talking specifically about a case that he says, look, the Rama rules, we rule that that you have a right in a case of Hefker, like Rabbeinu Tam, we rule that if it's Hefker, party two can go and steal it. But he says, look, Mikol Makom Baal Nafesh Yachmir Le'atzmo. He says, no matter what your right to, what you're entitled to, I mean, this is not really the point you're making, but this plays into the same piece that we saw before that I know people were talking about, is that you could be correct and totally within your rights.
Right.
It doesn't mean that's necessarily the right thing you should do.
So I guess this whole thing, like the whole time there's been this distinction between like legitimacy and decency. So I understand like the decency being adjusted for...
But to actually
for, like, wealthy person,
change the law.
If there's a legitimate claim issue, then that I don't think should be... it would be very surprising.
Yeah, we're fine.
I mean, just to respond to Chaya's question, so it's also the difference between... You're abstaining from buying versus changing the din. As in, I simply say, like, you know what? Like, I could have dove for it because I'm faster than you are, but I'll let you have it because I'm a nice guy. It's different than saying, you know, like...
We're going to change the rules
of the actual who gets it. It's just like, no, it's just like, I'm just... I know that I can get a bagel at the store, so I'll let you get it because I'm being nice.
Okay, that, yeah, yeah, no, I hear.
But
good.
The thing is, you can make that choice, but can we?
Can we impose that as a legal system?
That's the point of the being Casudas, is that you can tell everybody kiddish, please behave civilly. You know, you don't need to fight. There's plenty for everybody. But the reality is, Medin, he's allowed to go push for the chullin. So
there was discussion. I don't know. I heard Rav Yeris' voice with the Baal Nefesh. Was there discussion here about the definition of a Baal Nefesh?
No.
Oh. What's that?
Objective of answering is Baal Nefesh. That doesn't answer. That's not the question. Always is going to be Baal Nefesh. What's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, but his point is that you want to be a Baal Nefesh, so a Baal Nefesh sometimes I can't think of the right word, is Mevater, right? They have something owned to them and they say, it's okay. You know, that's this idea of the Baal Nefesh. Halavai, the people give up when they're... Halavai, the people who are in the wrong admit when they're in the wrong, that people who are in the right could still be willing to say, you could take it anyway. But that's a whole separate thing. Okay. Any questions on scenario number two? Any thoughts on scenario number two before we go to the ever-popular scenario number three? Okay. Scenario number three. So the Rambam, in source number 14, the Rambam tells us the following case. Ha'oseh shaliach lekadesh lo isha, ve'alach v'kitcha li'atzmo. I send my friend as an agent to be mekadesh a woman for me, and he goes ahead and he's mekadesh her for himself. Ha'rezo mekadesh l'shaliach. The shaliach, the person I sent, is married to her, or mekudeshet to her. She's mekudeshet to him. But asur laso ken. You can't do that. Don't do it. It worked, but don't do it. Anyone who does this, any agent who is asked, I send, you know, Shlomi to go marry this woman, like marry her to me, and he goes and Shlomi marries her for himself, he's a rasha. And the same thing would be in any type of mekach u'memkar, when I'm intending to acquire whatever object, whatever bottle of milk, and Shlomi goes and acquires it for himself first, preempts me to it. Rambam says that's a rasha. The Shulchan Aruch, though, in source number 15 at the bottom of page 4, ha'oseh shaliach lekadesh lo isha plonit, a man appoints an agent to consecrate a woman for him, ve'alach shaliach b'gicha le'atzmo, he acquires it for himself, Shlomi goes and marries her to himself, harei zo ze minhag rama'u. This is a deceitful practice. It's not a good practice. What's the difference here between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch? Yeah, Rambam calls this guy a Rasha. Shulchan Aruch doesn't. The Aruch HaShulchan in source number 16, I apologize, the header is on the bottom of page 4, but the text itself is on the top of page 5. The Aruch HaShulchan notes this language. He says, Ha'oseh shaliach lekadesh lo isha ploni. Person appoints an agent to consecrate a woman for him. Ve'alach ha'shaliach v'kitsha le'atzmo. Then he goes and marries her himself. Ha'rezeh min hagra ma'ut. Right? It's deceitful. The Rambam, the Perek Tet Din Yud Zayin, Katab de Nikra Rasha. Rambam writes that he's wicked, just like a poor person seeking a loaf, and someone preempts him. The Atur ve Shulchan Aruch, but the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch here, they don't mention that. Lokatfu de Nikra Rasha. He's not called a Rasha person here. The Azul Lishiteyu, they're following their opinion. The opinion is the garbage right here. Their opinion, of course, was that if you're acquiring from Hefker, right, that a gift or a lost item that's ownerless, he's not called a wicked person. And marriage is no less than that. Right? If you're not going to be a wicked person, if Albert and John are fighting over a bottle of milk and the owner is ownerless, we'll say that even if Albert was there, was about to grab it first, John comes and sweeps it, we'd say, oh, it's totally fine, it's an ownerless object. So if we're going to say that for an ownerless object, so marriage should be no less than that. If they're, instead of a bottle of milk, it's Victoria, the halacha would still be the same. Thoughts on that? Yeah.
Your agent has been employed to do something on behalf of whoever he's acting on. therefore, doesn't he have an employment responsibility to fulfill his actions?
Yeah, so we're going to say that he's a minhag rama'ut. He was not good. We're not going to say, like, great, you're a wonderful person, but we also can't say that what he did was not legally binding.
No, but why can't you? If he was employed to do something, being paid directly and indirectly to do that action, and he fails and deliberately undermines what he's supposed to do, then he is breaking his legal obligation. Isn't a worker obligated to fulfill their duties?
Nothing to pay. It's a pay, right? Isn't there a difference? I mean, if you paid someone to do it, that's something he's right.
If I sent you to the store and I asked you to go to the store to buy a candy bar for me, and you paid of your own money and pocketed it and kept the Twizzlers for yourself, so say that wasn't a nice thing to do. You shouldn't have done that. I asked you to buy the Twizzlers for me, but did we say that you don't own the Twizzlers now? You don't own the candy? You did it. You did the act.
You're also using a scenario where it is plentiful. Getting back to your original argument, if it was just that one diamond or whatever the case may be, then you would have a different argument. You wouldn't have been aware of the potential acquisition.
Yeah. So the halacha, though, the halacha rules that the agent's acts are legitimate. You can't. I was a legitimate act of kiddushin. They were mikudeshet. It wasn't good. It wasn't appropriate. But he's not a rasha though, and that's what the shulchan. That's what Aruch HaShulchan is pointing out. Because according to the Shulchan Aruch, let's say the shaliach was really interested in this girl. And he said, just like an ownerless object, when is something like this going to come around? This is the only time I could get this specific object. And it's ownerless, so person B can run and grab it before person A gets there. Shleach is saying the same thing. She's a wonderful person. I'm interested in her. I want to marry her. If she were a bottle of milk that was hefker, I'd be okay. So certainly, if it's a person that I'm in love with, I should be able to marry her first. Yeah.
The other guy didn't have a chance to say, listen, you know what? I got these kind of things, and I want, maybe it'd be better for me than for him.
Saying that to the girl or saying that to the?
No, the girl didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
The other guy sent the shaliach to acquire the girl for him. The shaliach goes ahead and nabs her for himself.
Yeah.
Well, the other guy didn't. The first fellow who sent him, he didn't have a chance to say anything to the girl. That's not fair.
All's fair in love. Yeah.
He shouldn't have said anything. Let somebody go for it.
Yeah, you want. Lesson learned, marry her yourself. Don't send someone else to do it for you. Yeah.
I was going to say that. It was your fault for not doing it yourself and sending a shaliach. And also, clearly it wasn't going to work out that well if all that it took was somebody else showing up first. First, and all it took on her to say no. Clearly you didn't have any actual connection to the question prior, or you would have actually, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
The difference was in the other, because he was short. Just sent
a shaliach. Yeah, took a shvuah, took an oath.
In this case also, if the shaliach takes an oath, it's a different story.
Okay, so we've got months to think this through, how this applies to Eliezer.
What if the fellow in the first place, in fact, knew her? He knew her, he had gone up with her once or twice, maybe just once or whatever it was, and he said, okay, I want him, this is who I want. And the other guy says, but because the other fellow is there, at the time that she feels that she wants to marry, so he's a lucky guy. Is it fair for her?
It might not be fair. It might be Rama'ut, but we'll say he still was. The second party was, we can't call him a rasha. We can't call him a wicked person. Sorry, David, were you going to, did you?
I was going to say similarly, the fact that, at least in the case of Kiddushin, you also need the woman's das in order for the Kiddushin to take effect. So maybe that there's something to be said that when the shaliach is the kaddish, the woman, it's not just that he's like stealing.
She is consenting to this.
Not only consenting to it, but essentially also rejecting the first man's potential kiddushin.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, yes.
Is there a difference between acting, wishing, and consecration. Consecration seems more holy than an acquisition. And I'm wondering, are you required to be consecrated?
You know, you're raising a good point about the language used and the framework that we're using here about kiddushin as acquisition. I don't want to go down that road about that. The framework may be comparable, but it's a different concept that's really happening here. But I think that's what the point that was being raised a moment ago was getting at, which is the fact that whereas the bottle of milk is not consenting in any way, but for kiddushin to happen, she has to consent to it. She has to say, "I want to be married. I accept this," and which is essentially also her saying, "I'm rejecting." Consort number one? Suitor number one. Not consort. Suitor number one. Yeah, you know, the relationship with kiddushin is not the same as going to the store and getting a carton of milk.
Why is she because she's one of a kind?
I think so. I think
so in that case, God forbid, even if she's married, so could say, listen, I'll try to sort of persuade her to get divorced because she's one of a kind. She's something special and she's the only one in the world.
No, but is there a difference between when...
She could always decide, maybe, and to break the relationship and go with somebody else. So if she's one of a kind...
But she's also
is he still a Ramai at that point? Or is he eventually going to become a Rasha?
Hold on. So let's say she's happily married. Let's say Doug went and grabbed the bagel. And he's now put the cream cheese on the bagel. And he's sitting at his table with the bagel. He's got the bagel. Albert is married to Victoria. Right? Yeah. They've got it. But Rob or John says, but I really like that bagel. That's a one-of-a-kind bagel. I want that bagel. And then he takes it. He's a... No, I'm saying he's a thief. No, if you take it out of Rob's hand, he's a thief. The guy who then says she's one-of-a-kind, but she's already married.
Terrible, definitely. But if he's saying he's not a Russian because she's quote unquote Efker because she's something which is very, very unique. So what is that?
But I think, and she's also she's an eligible bachelorette. I think it changes when she's married.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. That's a good point. That's an interesting point.
Will we see that in the
Rav Moshe Bayat
Teshuva? He mentions that.
Yeah, okay, so there we go. So yeah, we'll transition into the Rav Moshe and source number 17. B'davar shal shelato b'chad shmishtadech le'izo na'ara. Grant the question of someone who's already set up with a young woman. Im mutar le'acher le'nasot li'shtadech ota, le'ota na'ara. Shigam hu rutzeh ba. She's already been set up in shiduchim. She's already set up with one guy. But someone else says, well, I'm interested in her. I really like her. Is it appropriate for him? Can he now go and get set up with her also? Is this comparable to what all the cases we've been talking about? So he says, Im kvar hichlitu ligmora shiduch, ach adain lo naaseh kinyan shenogin lasot, bigmar shiduchin kadome. Let's say they've already, they've formalized it, or they haven't formalized it. They've agreed to it. But they haven't done the official formalization. Talui ze bedin hefker umatana. This is related to the ownerless object or gift situation. This is Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi. She lefi yesh omrim harishon shushitat tosot Rabbeinu Tam ve'arash leka b'shiduchin isra me'apeh b'chara. There is no problem here of ani me'apeh b'chara. Yesh kapeda gedola le'adam shuritzep bezoyot ve'achiro. Because he'll say, I want this one. I'm interested in her. I want to marry her. I can't find a girl like her doesn't come around. I want to marry her. I don't know. I'm thinking right now. We were just in the car for several hours yesterday. My daughter's really into listening to Beauty and the Beast. So people are holding in Beauty and the Beast. Gaston, he wants to marry Belle. There is no one else. She is the one for me, right? Gaston, I can't just take anyone. She's the one I want. Sorry for bringing Beauty and the Beast into this. It just popped into my head. Okay, so that's that. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, it should be no problem. According to Rabbeinu Tam, and according to the Rosh, apparently, he's totally entitled to this, because he could say, there's literally, I want her specifically. There's, I can't just go anywhere else. It's her. And now, he did, I didn't include this in the text here, but on the other side of that, of course, is Rashi. Rashi says it doesn't make a difference. Once the ani is already there, no one else can interfere. So according to Rav Moshe says, according to Rashi, obviously, someone else could not interfere. But Rav Moshe concludes, Me'achar she'rama me'sik she'svar rishona ikar. Since Rav Moshe Isserles concludes, like Rabbeinu Tam, who draws a distinction between ownerless and non-ownerless property, Leka Isser le'elu harotzim davka benerazo. There is no prohibition for those who desire this particular young woman. Right? If you're just a guy who's like looking to date someone, then it's she is no different than any other woman. But if you're actually, if the guy is particularly interested in her specifically, I will only marry Belle, and she is Belle, then there's a right. He could. Ein ik in isur le'elu harotzim davka benerazo. But he concludes, Aval min ha-ra'ui li-yireh Hashem le-achmir le-chush le-svar achrona she-ishi tat Rashi. Nonetheless, even though it's totally within his rights to say, she's the one for me, I'm going to interfere, he says it's appropriate for a yireh Shemayim, yireh Hashem, fear, someone who fears God, le-achmir, to be strict, le-chush le-svar achrona she-ishi tat Rashi, you should be concerned about the shita of Rashi, that maybe it's not appropriate to interfere, even though you absolutely think she's the one for me. Why is that terrible?
Because a couple are dating for 5 months. Every guy or girl can always start coaching the other one.
No, but he has to date her as well. Yeah. We know that he has to see her before. Assume that there is a history between her and the other guy as well.
According to what you're finding, Shane, someone is dating someone for 6 months. Now can he start to go and she'll try to persuade him or her, everyone, whatever. I think moral method is terrible.
But I think the case here, okay.
He says even more. They decide to get engaged, but they didn't do a kiddush, which can then they do in the States.
Ramosha knew the time. He's saying that they haven't signed on anything yet. They haven't paid any money. Nobody's done anything. There's no actual formal kinyan whatsoever being done. Just they've been going out.
Kinyan has to be not buying the wedding invitations. That's to be a kinyan of agreement that we're going to get engaged.
Correct.
We are married. We are getting married.
Like that nowadays.
I mean, the closest thing is putting down a down payment.
That's terrible.
Because for most
of what on the hall, you book
on the
hall.
Book the hall. That's the closest thing.
It's like kinyan. It's like kinyan.
Right.
In
other words, you want the girl so much, don't send them someone else to make the kiddushin for you. Go, make sure you're the one who's going to make the kiddushin. You got to do it right away.
While we're going down Ramosha's interesting sheet, you can also date multiple people. Ramosha says you're allowed to date multiple people, so he doesn't think it's a problem. If it's really a kiddush, if it's the right one, even if you're dating five people, you'll pick the right one. If not, not.
Sorry, Rav Moshe is saying you like her. No,
by yourself. Don't be Don't send someone else.
Yeah. Okay, but what we've seen here in this, we've seen three different scenarios: a scenario of a sale where a third party sort of interferes, a scenario where it's an ownerless object and one person's trying to grab the bagel and someone else interferes, and then a third scenario of a romantic relationship where a third party tries to get in to steal one of the parties of this relationship. And what we see here is there are these ideas. There's this aspect of the first person who's involved in this relationship, who's trying to acquire this object, has certain rights, and a third party is not entitled to just interfere. But there are certain circumstances where the third party may be allowed to interfere. But in all of these cases, we've still seen someone at least saying that even if you have rights to it, even if the third party can say, I am totally allowed to interfere here, I'm not a wicked person. It's great that you're not a wicked person, but maybe try to shoot for something more than just, at least I'm not a wicked person. But, there's a bal nefesh, a yirat Hashem, someone wants to be a holy person, a better person, should strive more than just not to be nikra rasha, but to live lives of kedusha and lives of respecting other people and other people's desires and what they're trying to acquire. And we should all be able to be people of midot and respecting other people while also staying within within the rights that we have as well. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for coming and for learning again. I'm happy to, we can entertain any other questions, anything.